The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
I was very happy to hear him say, if I was president, that war would have never happened. I see everyone saying worst since World War II by far. There's nothing even close. But we had a very good meeting today.
Isn't it amazing? We're told today that we need to spend time talking about this. Has anybody talked to you about who he is? How he came to power? What he used to do? That he's the richest man in the world? Has anybody discussed that with you? Well, I will, so you know what you're dealing with. Putin's been in power since 2000. That's 25 years. 25 years. He's 72 years old. So he's been in power since he was a young man. Do you know that's longer than any Kremlin leader? Any? Since Joseph Stalin, Mr. Producer? Longer than Brezhnev and all the rest? So you learned something just now, I bet you haven't heard all day. Putin has been in power since 2000, longer than any Kremlin leader since Stalin. He's now in his fifth term. There's no effective opposition anymore. Why? Because he killed them all.
Vladimir Zelensky is under pressure to make concessions after the U.S. president said that President Zelensky can end the war almost immediately. The last time he visited the Oval Office, he received a dressing down from his host. This time, he's bringing backup.
Your country's in big trouble.
Desperate to avoid a repeat of his last White House bust-up, this time Vladimir Zelensky is bringing backup to deal with Donald Trump. A full posse of European leaders are set to join him in Washington, united in their support of Ukraine, but varied in their approach to U.S. diplomacy. For Friedrich Merz, it was a friendly reminder of Trump's German heritage, gifting his grandfather's birth certificate during their Oval Office meeting in June, while also pushing for peace in Ukraine.
America is again in a very strong position to do something on this war and ending this war.
Emmanuel Macron tried to talk in terms that might appeal to Trump during his own turn in the hot seat.
Because, I mean, this war costs the office a lot of money. And this is the responsibility of Russia because the aggressor regime.
Keir Starmer proved popular for passing on an invite from the British royal family.
Thank you very much.
While Italy's Giorgia Meloni has been dubbed the EU's Trump whisperer for her close relationship with the US president. Beyond the White House, Finland's Alexander Stubb has bonded with Trump on the golf course. And NATO chief Mark Rutte, who will also be in Washington, has made sure to praise the president's approach to peace.
Daddy has to sometimes use strong language.
You have to use strong language. Every once in a while, you have to use a certain word.
Strong words and diplomatic tactics will likely be key in Monday's talks as European leaders back Ukraine in its most crucial moment yet in ending Russia's invasion.
There's a reason why this war has been going on for 3.5 years. It's a war that never would have happened had President Trump been president, but he inherited it. And now he's trying to do everything he can to bring about peace. He's made peace a priority of his administration, as you've seen with all the peace deals we've been able to achieve throughout the world. This one's the hardest one. Everyone acknowledges that. But he's the only one in the world that has any chance of doing it. Look, peace may not be possible at the end of the day. We don't know. But if it is possible, he's the only one that can get it done. And that's why everyone's asking him. All the president is trying to do here is narrow down the open issues, narrow them down, and then see if we can play some role in bringing that closer together so we can stop and end this war once and for all. Look, this war is only going to get worse. It's not going to get better. You've seen that in the escalation and the attacks. Russia's economy is now 100% full-time war footing. They are producing munitions. The Ukrainians are as well. Both sides are hitting each other very, very hard. And the war is only going to get worse.
High-stakes diplomacy. It continues from Friday's summit in Alaska. And now you've got all these European leaders joining Zelensky for another Oval Office meeting. We know how the last one turned out. So we'll see how that this unfolds. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. We are back at it this good Monday morning. You can email the show if you like, td@thetrumpet.com, or leave us some feedback at the Rumble channel, rumble.com/Trumpet Daily. I think the best way to maybe approach all of this that's going on is to just step back and look at the big picture of what God has prophesied. My father's recent program, The Sure Word of Bible Prophecy, just flipping through some of our prophetic texts here on the table on the Prince of Rosh. That's been around for quite a few years. Just last year, we had America Under Attack was prophesied. So you've got AUA, and then you've got the little booklet about the book, America Under Attack. We've got a lengthy booklet on the King of the South, and of course, the Holy Roman Empire, a strong German leader is imminent. And you just look at how, man, I mean, the diplomats, they're in action. They're trying to make peace, and a lot of them have sincere intentions. You can't very well say that about Vladimir Putin, but here are Western diplomats and now the European leaders, I suppose, coming in to really show strong solidarity with Zelensky in Ukraine, even as so many of them keep purchasing gas from Russia. It's such a convoluted mess to watch human beings, to watch the very best that mankind has to offer, trying to solve all of these man-made problems. We've created the problems. In fact, we were writing about Putin's next steps 5, 6, 7 years ago. It was just inevitable. He's rebuilding the empire. The old Soviet Union. He stated it as his goal. I mean, I think it was Mark Levin, one of the clips we have for later, who said, you know, for these kinds of psychopaths, we should just believe them. When they say they're on a quest to rebuild the empire, or when they say they're on a quest to kill or exterminate Jews, why should that be so difficult for us to process? It's not like they're exactly trying to conceal it, their true intentions. A lot of times they just tell you right to your face. 25 years he's been in power. This was from an article, I think this goes back to 2018. We said Putin would do this. This was the first military strike of a rising Asian superpower, and there will be more. And that's quoting my father in 2008, after Russian leader Vladimir Putin invaded the former Soviet nation of Georgia and pulled a fifth of its territory back under Russian control. This has just been the way of Putin. The Prince of Rosh. The invasion would prove to be the beginning of something much bigger, Mr. Fleury wrote, part of a dangerous new era for the world. You see, you step back and you look at how many dangerous spots there are all over the earth. It says here, Mr. Fleury explains that Putin's leadership of Russia, including his conquests over former Soviet states, shows that a major world conflict is fast approaching. That's what this shows, all of this. 25 years he's been in power. The war has been raging for 3.5 years, and it doesn't get nearly as much coverage about just the flat-out carnage. As many as 1.5 million Ukrainians and Russians slaughtered in 3.5 years of war. Putin, in many ways, has just flattened parts of Ukraine. And so now they're negotiating, I guess, land swaps. And just how much security Zelensky will have from the West and perhaps even the United States. If Putin and his forces get the Donbass or those areas of eastern Ukraine, again, a lot of varying reports. It says here, Putin's fulfillment of the Prince of Rosh prophecy proves the Bible true. And the Bible also prophesies that the bloodshed by the kings of the East and their hundreds of millions will give way to the most hope-filled event in human history. Yeah, it's all leading to the return of Christ to this earth. That was the true gospel message that Jesus proclaimed. As soon as his ministry started, he started preaching about the soon coming kingdom of God. That's the only way the nations of this world are going to become the nations of God. God's world, God's civilization, God's nation. Right now, it's something very different. This is Satan's world, 2 Corinthians 4:4. And you see such high hopes for dialogue, for discussion. And it's not like, you know, Donald Trump's the only one who's out there asking for dialogue, sitting down, as I'll read from Victor Davis Hanson. I mean, you've had all kinds of Western leaders take a snapshot with Vladimir Putin. And before that, other tyrants and dictators. That's just been man's way, trying to sit. I mean, Chamberlain did it with Hitler. But, you know, Russia back at that time wasn't so great either. What a strange, strange bedfellows. That's been the history of man. Entering into all of these alliances, these secret alliances in some cases, and then they split apart and break up, and then there's new alliances that form. The pursuit of peace. What we're seeing in Russia ultimately leads to the transition from man ruling man to God ruling man. It's almost here. It's just a few short years away. It says we have to realize that this is all good news because Jesus Christ is going to return to this earth at the very end of the coming world war. And you've got these great nations prophesied, like Russia, prophesied to fight against Christ. This is what they're going to be known for right at the very end. Jesus Christ will not be well received when he returns. Mankind will actually assemble great military forces to fight against the Son of God, to fight against Jesus Christ and the Bride of Christ. Levin mentioned there that it might be that Putin's the richest man on earth, perhaps even richer than Elon Musk. Listen to this from Mark Levin, clip 5.
Now, Putin is probably the richest man in the world. Elon Musk was asked about him several years ago. He said, they said, you know, you're the richest man in the world, Elon Musk. And you know what he said? And I quote, I do think that Putin is significantly richer than me. And when asked to elaborate, he refused. He got tight-lipped, and he never said it again. So Putin is viewed as, if not the richest, but one of the richest men in the world. Why? 70% of the Russian economy is controlled by the Kremlin. 70%. He gets a cut of all of it. All of it. He insists he earns just $140,000 a year as president. That he lives modestly in an apartment in central Moscow, and he has few other assets. But he's a liar.
He's a liar, and he's a murderer, too. We've noted that over the years on our programs, The Key of David, various articles that appear at the Trumpet.com website. The richest man, because he controls everything in Russia. Everything goes through him. He's in total control. And he sacrificed as many as 1 million of his own people. Because those sections of Ukraine are that important to him and to his empire. A million to 1.5 million. I mean, this makes what's happening in Gaza look like nothing. Like a little skirmish. And Donald Trump, you mean Donald Trump's the only one that's out there saying there's carnage. We've got to stop the killing. Ukraine is being flattened. Can we get together and at least agree on stopping the shooting, the murdering? You can't fault him for seeking that. How much success, though, is he going to have? with someone that has a track record like Vladimir Putin, Douglas Murray at the New York Post. He says, as the people of Ukraine know, neighborliness is not among Putin's great qualities. Still, it was with a reference to the U.S. and Russia being neighbors that Putin kicked off his conversation with President Trump in Alaska yesterday. He was talking nice about Ukraine, about America, but then look at what he's doing to Ukraine. That's what Murray ends with. He says he's a famous manipulator of meetings with world leaders. That's Putin's track record. Trump was in Alaska to get a deal done. Whether Putin was there for the same thing, they were there to see, talking about the media. And he mentions the B-2 stealth flyover, which was kind of cool, I guess, if you're an American. It says, for 2.5 hours, the leaders were shut behind closed doors, and the fact that they both came out together was a signal in itself. Trump had earlier suggested that if they didn't both appear after the meeting, then it was because there was nothing to talk about. And then listen to this. This is how he concludes. During his lengthy remarks, much longer than Trump's, Putin talked about how much Russia and Ukraine have in common. They're our brothers. We have so much in common with the Ukrainians. What? Then why are you killing each other? So much in common. And what bonds and roots they share. And Doug Murray says, Trump should remember that. Putin can pretend to have the best connection with you, and he'll still try to flatten you. That's just been his way, as you heard. He's murdered the opposition. He's in there for life. He's in there for life. Listen again to Mark Levin, clip 6.
I just told you about Putin, his wealth, his power. He has literally murdered scores and scores, hundreds of people, like Stalin did. And he's been there 25 years. 25 years. This is why the founding of this nation is so fantastic. And this is why people who are pushing Marxism and Islamism must be rejected and must be fought. Because this is what happens. You could think about Xi, you could think about Un, you can think about the Middle East with the Islamists. You could think about Castro and Maduro and Noriega. These are killers. These are power-hungry people. And what separates them from us is our founding and power-checking power.
Power-hungry, every one of them. And if you notice, they typically make their power grabs when you've got the Marxists running the nations in the West. Obama, Biden, the fake president. Look at all of these marches. Obama was there when he just waltzed in and took all of Crimea. Nothing happened. And then Biden, for his part, a few years later, he's talking about, well, you know, we wouldn't really do much if it's just a minor thing. Well, I guess Ukraine, it didn't turn out to be so minor. 1.5 million slaughtered? And we're trying to find any evidence that we can find of a possible genocide in Little Gaza. Surely the Israelis, they must have bombed a hospital somewhere. Meanwhile, you don't really hear anything about Ukraine. Not as much anymore, unless Donald Trump brings it up. The Europeans, as I say, for their part, well, they're still buying Russian fuel. So it kind of undermines their very serious tone when they bring it up. Victor Davis Hanson, speaking of the summit on Friday, says here, Putin in his media synopsis talked more about restored friendship with neighborly United States under Trump. Further on, Trump addressed the media more succinctly and with greater discretion than Putin, appearing more optimistic than the Russian-American hostility was thawing, or that it was thawing. It says the left lambasted Trump for speaking politely of Putin and vice versa, yet for all the posturing, we've known for some time the general outlines of a peace how it would come about and why it has not yet happened. It says Ukraine will not join NATO, but will likely be fully armed by the West. Ukraine lacks the power to retake Crimea or the Donbass, but with Western aid, it can preserve most of its territory. So this is what evidently we've got to live with. Russia makes another power grab. And instead of being punished, I guess they're befriended. These contours of peace can be shaped by promises. Now, as I've said so many times on this show before, you know, Ukraine's rife with all kinds of corruption itself. And the Biden crime family, they were part of it. So much corruption, so much evil. It's all around us. I mean, Mark Levin says that's why you've got to fight it. That's why you've got to push back. It's just everywhere. It's everywhere. The weakness. The cowardice. You know, over the weekend, it was so nauseating, I didn't want to bring a clip. James Comey just raving about Taylor Swift and how that she's really helped him through some hard times dealing with Trump. I mean, what is going on? This man was the former director of the FBI. And he's talking about some teeny bop pop star and how her music has been so helpful. Something is wrong with the minds of these people. Derangement, I mean, it's been there for so many years. You begin to wonder about their mental stability. You begin to wonder about demonic influence. Where are the leaders? Where are the adults? Where is the character? You don't see a lot of it. Europe talks grandly of unlimited support. Oh, yeah, plenty of talk. Well, you know, Putin, he talks about how that Ukraine and Russia, they share roots. They share roots. And then Europe, for its part, we have got to give unlimited support to Ukraine. But some Europeans still buy Russian energy. What? Slow walk aid. Seem exhausted by the war and are likely in time to peel away as they once did from the endless no-fly zones over Saddam's Iraq after the first Gulf War. Eventually, you know, the weakness will set in. Secretary of State Rubio, he was on with Maria as they were talking about the Russian fuel that so many European nations purchase. In that way, they're funding Putin's war. That's how convoluted this is. This is clip three.
Is Europe still buying Russian oil?
Well, if you look at the oil that's going to China and being refined, a lot of that is then being sold back into Europe. Europe's also buying natural gas still.
Well, I mean, wouldn't that be a major lever to pull to put sanctions on Europe or punish Europe for continuing to buy oil and gas from Russia? Is that something on the table?
Well, I don't know about on Europe directly, obviously, but certainly there are implications to secondary sanctions. If you put secondary sanctions on a country, let's say you were to go after the oil sales of Russian oil to China. Well, China just refines that oil. That oil is then sold into the global marketplace, and anyone who's buying that oil would be paying more for it, or if it doesn't exist, would have to find an alternative source for it. So we have heard, you know, when you talk about the Senate bill that was being proposed, where there's 100% tariffs on China and India, we did hear from a number of European countries, not in press releases, but we heard from them some concern about what that could mean.
Yeah, that when the money dries up, or if it's more expensive to purchase, and they're on the phone with the good old Uncle Sam, listen, you gotta reduce those sanctions so that we can get cheap energy from Russia and fund Putin's war effort. Notably, the left never really dwells on the likely 1.5 million dead, wounded, missing, and captured from 3.5 years of war. This is VDH. He says it makes the situation in Gaza look like child's play. Yet Westerners are far more likely to posture on the human costs of the quote-unquote genocide in the distant Mideast wars. Why is that? Why is our focus so much on little Gaza? Well, you can thank the regime media, the international regime media, for a lot of that. And the propaganda war that Hamas is waging and winning, thanks to a complicit media. It says here, talking to a monstrous Putin is not treasonous, foolhardy, or unnecessary. FDR openly courted and joked with and even praised an even greater monster in Joseph Stalin, who in 1941 had the blood of nearly 20 million Russians on his hands, and that became an ally of the United States and Britain. Murdered 20 million of his own people? It says here, Nixon did not just go to China, but sought to change the geostrategic nuclear landscape by courting Mao Zedong, the greatest mass murderer of the 20th century. Not calling Putin a killer and a murderer at the summit is hardly appeasement, but more like art of the deal, speaking softly while carrying a big stick rather than Biden-style loud rhetoric while carrying a twig. Now, how many times were we treated to that loud rhetoric? Don't you do it. And then nothing happens. And then Putin just waltzes into the Donbass. Why not? I mean, he's just carrying a twig. It says here, finally, this is his conclusion. It was not Trump who pushed a plastic red button to embark on a Russian reset with a voracious Putin. It was not Trump who invited Russia back into the Middle East after nearly 40-year hiatus. It wasn't Trump who, after the reset's failure, moved on to concoct Russian collusion and Russian disinformation, to use Russia to destroy a political rival. It wasn't Trump who went to Ukraine, threatened to hold up aid, and fired a prosecutor looking into his son selling to Ukrainians the influence of his father's vice presidency. Trump didn't do these things. It wasn't Trump on whose watch Putin invaded Georgia, the Donbass, and Crimea and sought to absorb Kiev. He says it wasn't Trump who dreamed up the Nord Stream 2 pipeline to subsidize green energy fantasies while still buying Russian energy. And it wasn't Trump who conditioned his possible reaction to Putin's invasion based on whether it might be minor. That's right. Biden said it. You know, well, if it's a minor incursion, it won't be too bad. The rhetoric, the talk, the endless dialogue, the diplomacy. We're now best friends. And, you know, we're actually pretty good friends with Ukraine, he says, as he flattens the nation. How do you solve these kinds of problems? Well, we better get into our booklets on prophecy in particular. The strong German leader, it's eminent. Prophecy about AUA. Prince of Rosh, Jeroboam, Antiochus. It's all building to the return of Jesus Christ. Listen to Mark Levin as he's just summarizing here the events of the past couple of decades. Clip 7.
In 2014, then Putin invaded Crimea. Crimea, which is Ukrainian territory. And he annexed it. It's strategically very, very important. Essentially sits in the Black Sea. There was no effective pushback. So there he is, trying to take eastern Ukraine. There he is. He took 25-30% of Georgia. There he is. He took 100% of Crimea, which was Ukrainian. And then he puts almost 200,000 soldiers on the border with Ukraine in 2022. And this is where everybody said, he'll never invade. And this is where Biden said, well, if he takes a little land, it's okay. It triggered a full-scale invasion of Ukraine, as you know. You know, we ought to listen to these people, him, Xi, Un, Iran, It's not like they're hiding what they want to do.
Listen to them. Pay attention to their chants, death to America. Look at their fruits. Look at the history he rattles off there. I mean, it's not like it was that long ago. Stepping back again, Herbert Armstrong, he wrote this in 1981 about the leadership or lack thereof that we see in the world today. He said, the civilization has been piloted by largely inexperienced leaders. And really, I think you could say it's a lot worse than that. It's not just a lack of experience. It's a lack of understanding. It's a lack of wisdom. It's a lack of courage. We've lost our direction, he said. We're not traveling toward the intended destiny of mankind's incredible potential. Instead, we're heading for a crash. It's definitely not good news that we're traveling the disaster course at extra fast time and gaining momentum rapidly. Human leadership, the pilots of our civilization, have been incompetent. It has faced tough problems, and it's incapable of solving. It's piloting humanity through troubles and evils beyond human control. It's incompetent. We can't solve our problems. We're just making the problems worse. Human leadership. This story about the guy running for mayor, Memdani, I think is his name. Play clip 11. This is on his phone call with the dear leader. I guess the dear leader called him recently because he was so heartened by this man's leadership. This radical Islamist. Play clip 11.
So some news broke that former President Barack Obama called you. I was hoping that you could help explain just when exactly that call happened. What was that conversation like? What was discussed? And did he signal that he could be endorsing you? And then I have a follow-up.
Follow-up.
Always.
More questions.
That call happened soon after the primary. It was a call that I was honored to receive. And the contents of it were focused on the campaign that we ran, the importance of hope in our politics, and the ways in which we govern to deliver on that. And the lessons of that conversations are ones that I hold close to me as we continue to build this campaign to win the general election. And it was an honor to receive that time and those reflections from the former president.
It says a lot about just how far removed Obama is from reality, from the discussion. I mean, that someone like this could win the New York mayor's race. That's not exactly a news flash. But if you're trying to gain the support of a national majority to return to power, look at all the positions these people are taking. Trump, for his part, is out there claiming victories politically and otherwise. In this case, though, you've got these radicals, these extremists, and then they're out of power and they go even more extreme. Well, now let's not have the National Guard to keep our streets safe in D.C. They're picking, I mean, there's a story at the Hill right now. Mamdani is a political risk Democrats shouldn't take. But here comes the dear leader. I kind of like what I see here. I mean, he is really radical. No wonder. No wonder the silence coming from Obama has been deafening, because the old magic isn't there anymore. And here again, this is fulfilled prophecy. Listen to Matthew Dowd as he talks about Obama and Mamdani, clip 9.
The New York Times reports that President Obama reached out with advice to New York City Democratic mayoral candidate Zohran Mamdani. What does that say about the position of the Democratic Party right now? And does Obama see something in Mamdani that others might not?
Well, first, I'd just add, former President Obama's voice important in this moment? Yes, but so are so many other people's voices, including everybody that's watching or listening to this. At this moment in time, every single one of our voices is important. Obama's just happens to be a higher priority in this. I think President Obama, who's very smart, who's very politically astute in this, recognizes that a charismatic leader like Mamdani is beginning to be the future of the Democratic Party.
Let's just go more extreme, where our policies are so unpopular and they're plummeting the popularity for any of the, well, you can't even really think of a policy that just really resonates with the Democrats. They've been going on Get Trump for 10 years. They spent years before that reaching out to Putin. Putin's Russia. And then they finally turned Putin into a villain so that they could get Trump. These are leaders. They're going to solve the world's problems. Charismatic. He's a radical. He's an extremist. He's dangerous. And Obama loves him. Listen to Victor Davis Hanson as he gives his assessment of the health or the condition of the whole Democrat Party, clip 8.
I do think it's collapsed because by any classical definition, Mark, they lost the 2024 popular vote, the Electoral College vote. They don't have the Congress. They don't have the White House. They don't have the Supreme Court. They're 30-70 on the 30 side of all these issues from crime, the environment, energy, the border, illegal immigration. And they're frustrated. They're angry because now Donald Trump is doing something they never imagined anybody would do. He's not treating the symptoms of the progressive pathology. He's talking about the sources. So he's going after the institutions that indoctrinate people in the university, NPR, PBS, the elite law firms, and that's what. That's setting them on fire because they understand that they always exercise power irrelevant of whether they actually had political power. They had cultural, social influence through these institutions, foundations, the university, K-12, corporate boardrooms. And now when he went after woke and ESG and PBS, it's a whole new counter-revolution and they're melting down. I don't even think there is a Democratic Party right now. It's just an amalgamation of a bunch of different groups, but they're all way to the left. And we shouldn't fool ourselves about New York, Mark. I think it's not going to be. They may win. Mamdani may win, but he couldn't win anywhere else, I don't think, other than these blue cities. And that's a minority of the population. So they're going over the cliff. And like any addict, they would rather go over the cliff than quit.
Obama's been silenced. Boy, what a, this is a massive, tables being turned all over the place. Because, you know, we're old enough to remember, most of us, back when Obama could do no wrong. Everybody swooned. But now they're going over a cliff. There you go. America under attack is prophesied. I could play you the montage again. All the comments my father made in recent years about God having to remove Obama and silence Obama. I mean, the major events that we're seeing happen in the political sphere, yes, there are still some, you know, some big decisions. I mean, Donald Trump does big things. You have to acknowledge that. You have to give him credit for that. Whether or not they're always, you know, sound is another matter. But look at what God did. That's my point. Look at what God did last year. Look at how God saved his life. Look at how God brought him back against all the odds. Look at how God silenced Obama. I mean, you would think that more politicians would actually be looking at God saying, well, I better seek guidance and counsel from him. Because I don't know the way forward. How about a little of that? I mean, I guess Rubio at least said, you know, maybe we won't find peace here. So that's a rare bit of someone just giving a little bit more of a humble assessment. But the confidence of human beings, even when we're just surrounded by disaster after disaster, God is saying, look, I'm trying to get your attention. God silencing Obama, the whole party going off a cliff. MSNBC is making its break from NBC. And so NBC's just say, hey, change your name now. We don't want to really be associated with you. It's MSNBC. You've heard the clips on this show, the morning meltdown. What's going to happen to, well, what's in the future for CNN? These stations that have zero ratings. And yet they talk with such confidence. I mean, they know, they love Mom Donnie. Oh, yes. He's not radical enough for them. As the cable news channel MSNBC splits up with NBC, it is also dropping the NBC from its name. Now it's going to be MS Now. MS Now. There you go. Get your subscription while you can, because MS Now is probably going to be MS Gone before we know it. MSNBC was originally launched in 1996 as a partnership between Microsoft and MSNBC or NBC. When Microsoft sold its stake in the venture, the name stayed the same. It's just incredible to see the lies being exposed, to see the deceit being exposed. I mean, Mark Levin's right. The radical leftists, they've got to be resisted. They've got to be put down. You've got to fight against them because their influence just keeps spreading. And you see it around the world with these communist regimes. And, of course, you've seen the communist infiltration in our own nations. This is from Maureen Dowd. She's the columnist at the New York Times. My sister's having a bad summer. In fact, even as I'm typing this, Peggy is at a D.C. police headquarters. We had dinner in Georgetown recently, and when we came back to my house where her car was parked, she was short a Buick. Car got stolen. It's all over D.C., these carjackings. Two polite officers who responded to our call said that they could do little amid a rash of brazen car thefts by teenagers. Here's law enforcement showing up. They're polite. They're nice. We just can't do anything to solve this problem. There's too much of it. In the nation's capital, the doorstep to America, the threshold. One officer said even if they saw the perp driving in her car, they could not chase him because of laws passed by the D.C. Council. The council's there to save the teenage thugs, to protect them. Kids, some too young to drive legally, can just hotwire cars to go home. Peggy always loved that Buick. The next morning, though, an officer from Prince George's County, a working-class Maryland suburb, banged on her door. Her car was found in a park, running nearly out of gas. When she collected it after paying a $215 towing charge, she found an odoriferous collection, half-eaten pizza, grape soda cans, fast food wrappers, used condom, debit cards. She called the D.C. police to tell them about the debit cards, thinking they could help trace the thieves. But the police said to throw them away. Nothing that the card holders had, probably already gotten new ones. It says here, then the icing on the cake, she got over $1,800 worth of speed camera tickets that the car thieves had racked up, going 70 miles per hour in a 25 mile per hour zone. So they ticket the owner. I don't know if she's able to get out of that or not. Somebody's going to have to pay because, you know, that's an area. The ones that aren't the thugs, I mean, they play hardball. with the law-abiding citizens. You better pay every traffic ticket. We're not going to let this one slide. I mean, this is revenue. This is revenue for the D.C. Police Department. It says here, it's also true that many D.C. residents are secretly glad to see more uniforms. This is Maureen Dowd. Donald Trump's winning over the residents of D.C. because he's finally restoring some law and order. And the Democrats are out there campaigning like Mamdani. She says here, I find myself packing pepper spray again. I feel more wary walking around the city. It's disturbing to ask someone to unlock the Claritin at CVS because the police don't lock up the smash and grabbers. Further down, it says, while the district's homicide rate has fallen, it's almost as high as New York's at its most dangerous in 1990. Yes, Trump, listen to this. She's basically applauding Trump. Trump is playing the savior on crime when he's the biggest scofflaw in town, first inciting the mob on January 6th and then pardoning felons who broke into the Capitol and beat up police officers. Ellie Honig, a CNN legal analyst and author of the forthcoming book, When You Come at the King, Inside the DOJ's Pursuit of the President from Nixon to Trump, summed up the dilemma. Yes, Trump is hypocritical and scattershot on public safety, he told me. And yes, he's likely doing this as a flex, but he happens to be within the law here, and he happens to be right. Imagine taking this as a position for a columnist. You know, I'm glad to see. Now, Trump's a criminal. He's committed crimes. He likes him some violence. But you know, in this case, if carjackings go down, then he's actually doing the right thing. What a world these people live in. Their viewpoint so twisted and warped because they can't see past a political narrative. And they can't just give someone credit without qualifying it because they hate him so much politically. In other words, there's no just pure right and wrong. Everybody's got to be doing what seems right in their own eye. Yes, I can admit that I don't like carjackings. I don't like it when my sister has to pay all these fees because of some teenage thug that took it out for a joyride. It says here, I have no doubt that Trump enjoys targeting Democratic-controlled cities for embarrassment, Powell says. I also have little doubt that a mother in Ward 8 might draw comfort from a National Guard soldier standing watch near her child's school. You know, I know it's Trump is targeting Democrats. He's targeting Democrat cities. But then, you know, I think if the mom feels safer, then, you know, this is something I can get behind. What is wrong with these people? That they just can't look at something black and say that's black or it's white over here, that's white. This is right, this is wrong. It's exactly like it says at the end of Judges, right? Every man out there doing what seems right. It says here, progressives should not fall into Trump's trap and play down crime, once more getting on the wrong side of an inflammatory issue. As with inflation, they should remember that personal experiences can count more than sanguine statistics. So we got to be careful here. We've got to navigate our way through this very carefully. We can't credit Trump because Trump's a criminal. Trump should be in prison. But then you don't want to just say that there's not a problem with crime either, because there is. My own sister had her Buick hijacked. This is commentary for 2025 during the era of Jeroboam. Where there's a lot of, I mean, there's go big or go home almost every day with this administration. But when you step back and look at the bigger picture again, How many of these problems are actually going to go away or be solved? It's nice to see upholding law and order. It's refreshing, particularly at the nation's doorstep. The front door to the United States of America, just as Trump said last week, just as his father taught him, it tells you a lot about the whole establishment. This is from earlier this year. The Russo-Ukrainian war is showing the world the scale of evil Putin is willing to commit. Russia is inflicting terrible atrocities against Ukrainians. It's deliberately bombing civilian structures, including apartment buildings, hospitals, and schools. It's laying mines and areas in retreats from putting innocent lives at risk. It has forcibly taken nearly 20,000 Ukrainian children to Russia and is paying Russian families to adopt and re-educate them, a crime that international law labels as genocide. Think about the people screaming in Donald Trump's ear about what Netanyahu's doing, about how that he's committing genocide, how that he's the problem in the Middle East. How many people are screaming this? I know the MAGA movement does not want to get entangled in any foreign wars, nothing. But this is genocide. He's kidnapping babies. He's flattening entire areas in Ukraine. There, if we're to believe VDH, it's 1.5 million victims slaughtered in this war. How do you make sense of it? How do you identify root causes? How do you uproot this problem and then just get rid of it for good? Or can you? Well, the positive storyline here, as I said earlier, it's leading to the return of Jesus Christ to this earth. That's the good news. That's the good news. My father writes this. This is all being directed by Vladimir Putin. This man has been working to rebuild the Soviet empire for years, including taking over territory from former Soviet states. But in Ukraine, he's encountering real resistance for the first time, and he's showing himself willing to keep escalating the brutality to achieve his goals. That's been the history, the recent history. One Russian journalist called Putin a supersized model of the KGB. Putin supplied enormous support to the suicidal religious extremist regime ruling Iran, including its nuclear weapons program. Talks about the history in Chechnya, poisoning Yushchenko back in 2004. Putin is evil, ruthless, vindictive, an agent with Soviet-style methods of psychological warfare, assassination, and war. It says, we must recognize this reality. And then my father says, yet most people don't believe God and fail to see clearly the evil that human beings are capable of. We just don't see it. In some cases, we don't want to see it. We turn a blind eye to it. We think so much can be solved with some discussion, some dialogue, some backpatting, handshakes, smiles, press conferences, 2.5-hour negotiations. But you look at the carnage on the ground, you look at the fruits. It's not a pretty picture, this world. This is certainly not God's world. If you want to read about God's world, it's based on dozens and dozens of prophecies in your Bible, then call our operators today and request the wonderful world tomorrow, what it will be like. What's it going to be like? What are cities going to be like? What will leaders be like in the wonderful world tomorrow? All of that is discussed, all that and much, much more. That's all we have time for on today's show, the fastest moving hour in broadcasting. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Thanks for joining us today, and we'll see you again tomorrow.